Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. Today is Sunday, February 8th, 2026. My name is Leah M., recovered compulsive overeater and your moderator. The share ID numbers for Friday, February 6th, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 23,189. That's 23189. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 23,190. That's 23190. This morning, A Vision for You presents Step 11, Prayer and Meditation, Improving Conscious Contact with God. Step 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. The 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to compulsively overeat and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. The 12 steps are designed to bring about a spiritual awakening. For the spiritual awakening to occur, the 12 steps are worked in the prescribed order, one step at a time, beginning with the first step. Each step flows logically from the one before it, and builds upon its principles. Our spiritual awakening allows us to receive strength, inspiration, and direction from our higher power. The implementation of the steps and their spiritual disciplines enables us to develop a direct connection to the power which is greater than we are. In step 11, we carry that goal further. We seek to improve the conscious contact with God that we have established in the previous step. We are trying to learn to tap into this conscious contact in order to act intuitively and to live according to the dictates of our higher power. Joining us today to elaborate on Step 11 is Melissa C., a recovered compulsive overeater from New York. Melissa is a loyal servant of Overeaters Anonymous, a beloved friend to A Vision for You, and dedicated to the 12-step way of life. And it's with great appreciation and always a delight to welcome Melissa C. to the line. Good morning, Melissa.
Hey, good morning, Leah. Thanks so much for that awesome start and for all your incredible service for us, all of us here this morning. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York and freezing cold New York this morning. This is like probably one of my favorite topics. I think it actually is my favorite topic, prayer and meditation. And you know, generally, I hear a lot of background noise. I'm not sure if that's, but hopefully you're hearing me. Normally when I start off talking, you know, I kind of give my whole spiel, my whole story, but there's so much here that I don't want to spend too much time on what I was like, but I'll just kind of tell you briefly. I was a hot mess. You know, I had the worst attitude in the world. I was full of self-pity. I was full of, like, everything was about me. I was full of sadness. I was out there telling everybody else what they should do, how they should do it. I did it in manipulation. I did it in outright action. And I was morbidly obese, killing myself with food, riddled with panic attacks. Life felt so heavy. And then I experienced a miracle. I came in and out of the rooms, and really the last time I came in, thank you God, I came and stayed, and I feel like what happened was what I was promised, that I had a spiritual awakening. It feels like my life was one way. I turned the page, God picked me up, and he put me in a different book with a whole different story. And for that, like, I say that it sounds like magic. It wasn't. It was actually a miracle. But there was no magic, because there is actually work involved in maintaining, and achieving that kind of miracle. So I'm going to, and so since that time, I've been relieved of the physical, complications of being a compulsive overeater, meaning I've, released over 160 pounds. I live in a normal size body, and God willing, in 2 weeks or so, I'll have 12 years of entire abstinence. So I'm going to jump into the topic, and I'm going to be kind of bouncing around between the AA 12 and 12 on step 11 and the big book in step 11. So you kind of have to bear with me, and I'll, be going back and forth. But there's some really good nuggets in the AA 12 and 12, and that is part of our literature as well. So page 85 in the big book says, much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from him who has all knowledge and power. And when I read that, I have in my book, like, strength, inspiration, and direction. And next to it, I put, like, Sid, And because I have had a dear friend in OA going back many years. She was, like, in her 80s when I came in. And she was a nun. And she shared with me that although she'd been a nun throughout, I think from 20 on, the 12 steps was how she came to know God and have a relationship with God. And she referred to God once as Sid. Like, and it would make me laugh, but it made it so accessible. Just to call God a simple name, strength, inspiration, and direction. And that was a good entry point for me when I first came in. So we're told if we carefully follow directions, we've begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. And to some extent, we've become God conscious and like awoken to God, conscious of God and aware of his presence in my life. That's like a pretty incredible promise. And that we've begun to develop this vital sense. So this sense, this awareness of God in my life is vital. It's life, supporting for me. But I've got to go further, right? I don't just get it and, okay, that's it. I have to take some action here. Step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works. If we have the proper attitude and work at it, it would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. So I'm definitely not going to be vague. I'm going to try to give definite and valuable suggestions that come from the text, right? So what do they mean by the proper attitude for effective prayer and meditation? And, like I say, when I came in here, I had a bad attitude. And this attitude, for that, the proper attitude is an attitude of open-mindedness and a craving for God. And basically, I am a woman who must have a miracle. Like, that has to be my attitude, that nothing else will save me. And I'm told this all throughout the text and throughout my life. If I have the attitude that I need a miracle, then I will pray because my life depends on it. But here's another miraculous transformation that happens here, is that eventually we don't just do these things because we're afraid we're going to eat again. I do these things because I want to, because I crave this relationship with God. I crave living this way. And prayer and meditation is our spiritual nourishment, And I think, what else might they mean by that right attitude? And for me, I think it brings me back to, it's step 5, right, on page 72, way back in the beginning of this chapter, into action. it mentions attitude again, and it talks about we've got our personal inventory, and now what are we going to do with it? Well, we're trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. And, you know, an attitude, right, is the way you think and feel about something. And it's a feeling or a way of thinking that affects a person's behavior. And so recovery for me means an attitude adjustment. Like, I needed a new attitude. I need continuous contact with God so that I can get this attitude adjustment. And I need to constantly re-examine myself so that I can allow God to change my mind, to change my perspective. Step 11 says this, right? Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So the purpose of this step is to improve the way I contact and communicate with God so that I can know what he wants me to be and what he wants me to do, and that I can actually receive his power so that I can go out there and be what I think he wants me to be and do what I think he wants me to do. And that contact has to be deliberate, and it's got to be intentional, meaning it's more than I just kind of feel God with me, right? I mean, that's great, but I'm actually supposed to invite God in with me. And, you know, I would say that this is not something irrelevant and unimportant. You know, I think it's the whole point of my recovery. If I look at my step one foundation, which, you know, Leah mentioned step one, and I'm really glad she did. If I look at my step one foundation, I understand just how crucial this is. Because I, on my own power, cannot keep myself from eating things that I know in my mind cause me tremendous harm. You know, step one is I'm allergic to foods, ingredients, and behaviors, and even knowing I'm allergic to them, I cannot stop ingesting those things on my own power. And I can't rely on any human power either. Only an act of providence can rid me of the obsession. Like, basically, you know, I say it all the time, I am a person who must have a miracle, that nothing else but God's intervention could do the trick for me. And so, like, what is prayer, right? Like, if we keep talking about it, and if you define it, like, the basic definition of prayer is a solemn request for help, right? So when I entered the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous, I actually was already praying. I didn't know it, but I was requesting help. You know, I thought that what I was asking for was for people to show me how to eat better and how to get more willpower. And I quickly discovered that while the people were important and they were really helpful supports, and they still are, they could not be my solution. And so it had to be something much bigger that could do for me what I could not do for myself, and what others couldn't do for me either. My request for help at that point became much more serious and complete. Page 59 says this and how it works, that without help it's too much for us, but there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. You know, I have the privilege of working with others, and when I ask sponsees, you know, if I'm going to work with someone, I do have some things that I ask people to do each day. And, you know, and I ask them to do these things because these were the things that I was asked to do and that I've done and that I continue to do and that they brought me closer to God. Like, and my feeling is that anything that I do in this program, the purpose of doing those things is so that I can achieve a closer contact with God. And so one of the things that I ask people to do is, and that I'm asked to do, is to pray and meditate. And right from the beginning, you know, a minimum of 30 minutes a day. And that, you know, someone might say, well, where does that say it in the book? And I guess it doesn't, right? But I'll offer my opinion. And if you don't like it, you can disregard it. You know, it's okay. But I believe it like this. I watched an awful lot of TV when I first came in here. Nothing wrong with television. But I believe that if I'm someone who requires a miracle, well, my God, I'm going to ask for a miracle. And I'm going to certainly spend at least as much time asking for that miracle, asking for God's help, as I would have spent watching a typical TV sitcom. Like, I would binge watch TV, and I made all the time in the world for it. So to me, I don't think it's a lot to ask a person to set aside 30 minutes. And actually, prior to starting the steps, we're actually instructed to ask God for protection and care. Like, right at the end of how it works, that, you know, that little, that reading that we do, before we say the steps, we ask God for protection and care. So that means that even before embarking on step work, we're praying. That's my interpretation. That's how I read it. And, you know, so now I'm going to go to the AA 12 and 12 a little bit. And on page 97, it says, we liked AA all right. And again, this is in the AA 12 and 12. And we're quick to say that it had done miracles, but we recoiled from meditation and prayer as obstinately as the scientist who refused to perform a certain experiment lest it proves his pet theory wrong. Of course, we finally did experiment, and when unexpected results followed, we felt different. In fact, we knew different. And so we were sold on prayer and on meditation and prayer. And, you know, and then a little further down it says, almost the only scoffers at prayer are those who never tried it enough. And I have to say this is true. I've witnessed it. I have seen so many people embark on this program who were like, I just can't pray and I just can't meditate. It's really hard for me. And we offer some suggestions. You know, the book offers suggestions. And what I've come to see is that most of these people really find it incredibly helpful, and they find their own path, their own direct line with God. And I have to say, too, that in my experience, the people whose recovery I look at, that guide me, that help me, that I think are like stellar recovery, have shared with me that they consistently pray and meditate. And so, you know, that is where I, you know, if I want what you have, I'll do what you do. Page 97 says, those of us who have come to make regular use of prayer would no more do without it than we would refuse air, food, or sunshine. And for the same reason, when we refuse air, light, or food, the body suffers. And when we turn away from meditation and prayer, we likewise deprive our minds, our emotions, and our intuitions of vitally needed support. As the body can fail its purpose for lack of nourishment, so can the soul. So I read this and I think, why in the world would I refuse to meditate? Like, why would I refuse? If I'm unable to get the support my very soul needs, I would never want to refuse to do that. You know, I think back to my reasons for being here, right? Why am I here? Why was I here? Why did I come here, meaning not on this planet, but here in the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous? Why did I come? Because my mind was warped, because I was overly emotional, because I was being governed by my feelings, and I lacked intuition. Like, you know, intuition, and it talks about it a lot in this step. Intuition is a thought that requires no conscious reasoning. It's automatic thought. And if my automatic response is to shove more food in my mouth, you know, no matter what happened, all of a sudden I would find myself not even realizing it, but eating, I would say that I clearly needed, and I actually say still need, a different automatic response and one that is beneficial. So here are the benefits. Page 98, in the AA 12 and 12, we're given the benefits. The light of God's reality, the nourishment of his strength, and the atmosphere of his grace. And I think, you know, what do we get? It's a beautifully phrased way of saying the benefits are knowledge of God's will, God's strength, and God's favor. Like, grace is actually favor, that God looks favorably upon me. And so there are three parts, really, to step 11. One, self-examination, you know, self-reflection, daily inventory, which, you know, I'd say is much done like in a fifth step. You know, my practice, my interpretation of self-examination is myself, God, and another human being. And, you know, it's described here on this page that it gives us the development of that kind of humility that makes it possible for us to receive God's help. So I need to have an attitude of humility if I want to get any kind of help at all. And the other two parts of this step is meditation, and the third is prayer. And that, you know, we're told there's a direct linkage among self-examination, meditation, and prayer, that if we do them separately, they can bring us a lot of relief and benefit, but when they're logically related and interwoven, the result is an unshakable foundation for life. And, you know, for me, that's a promise. I have that underlined, that I get from this step an unshakable foundation for life. And, you know, so if I have a strong daily inventory practice and I follow it up with meditation and prayer, then no matter what happens around me, I'm unshakable. And I think this is how people remain abstinent and recovered, regardless of life being lifey. And I have to, my experience is that is true. That, you know, I have written share something here. So, you know, for me, like, I have experienced some of life's hard knocks, you know, loss of my mom, you know, difficulties with my children, difficulties with the workplace. My God, COVID, right? The world seeming to shut down. You know, difficulties with siblings. And that I have an unshakable foundation for life, which means I can continue living in recovery no matter what. So now, you know, I'm going to look back in the big book because it tells us, you know, about our inventory practice, right? And that at night. So this is back in the big book on page 86. It tells us that we're going to constructively review our day and we're going to look to see, you know, am I resentful? Am I selfish? Am I dishonest? Am I afraid? Do I owe an apology? You know, those questions. What could I have done better? And that after I make my review, I ask God's forgiveness. Okay, there I am. I'm praying again. And I ask what corrective measures should be taken. And for me, you know, I receive feedback in my meditative practice of what corrective measures I should take. And, you know, there's lots of different ways that people do nightly reviews. You know, I in particular really share it with others. And I know there are loads of people who have different opinions about how to do it, and that's okay. But for me, I found it was really useful to do it. First of all, do it nightly and do it in community. I need a little accountability. Community helps me have accountability, and I need to have a little humility. I need to share with others my imperfections, that I can be a hot mess. It helps me to cooperate with the removal of my defects if I allow, you know, to have a direct line into me and my thinking. And what it does is it encourages me to do better, to seek God's will, and then to live in agreement with the divine. You know, and then it talks about our morning meditation. You know, page 86 all the way to, you know, 88, all the way. There's a lot here. And that I'm going to think about the 24 hours ahead. I'm going to consider my plans for the day. You know, and I think what's important there is that I consider my plans for the day, that I think about it carefully before making decisions, that, you know, that to consider something is to think about it and to be drawn towards a course of action. And, you know, and I think it's important that it doesn't say that I create my plan for the day or I construct my plan for the day, because I don't create the plan and I don't build the plan. Like, I remember, you know, in step 11, all the way back, 8 steps ago, when I turned my will and my life over to the care of God, I said that I was going to consider what I'm going to be doing for the day. And then I'm asking myself, what actions will I be taking today to live in agreement with what God's will is for me? And this generally means that I'm thinking about others and how my actions are going to impact them. So, you know, and then it talks about what happens if I face indecision. If I don't know what to do, I don't know what course to take. And that here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. And I these are such helpful directions. When I don't know what to do, well, I ask God for inspiration. You know, inspiration is the process of being mentally stimulated to do or feel something, especially to do something creative, like a sudden, brilliant, creative, or timely idea. I ask God for that. You know, inspiration has this other meaning too. You know, it's the drawing of a breath to inhale. And, you know, and I know that that is not something that I'm in control of, right? I'm not in control of my breath. I might think I am, you know. And in fact, you know, if you think you are, yeah, hold your breath. And you faint, and generally you begin breathing again. So oftentimes when I'm struggling with something, it helps me if I can just focus on my breath to feel the power of God's light, God's love, the air coming in. You know, I can clench my fists as I inhale, and then I unclench and let go, and I exhale, reminding myself that God is in charge, deeply breathing, drawing in oxygen, completely relaxed. That's my ultimate goal. And I pray for God to stimulate my thoughts. You know, inspiration is a thought that comes clearly from God. It's a thought that doesn't sound like anything I could have thought up myself. And it's an idea that's often creative, you know. And intuitive, right, in intuition is understanding something immediately without the need for conscious reasoning. Basically, it's a thought that seems instinctive, as though it came from within me, as though it was something I was just born knowing. And if I don't feel inspired or intuitive then, what do? Right? I might do all this, and it's like, I'm still not working. Well, we're told, relax and take it out easy. Like, you know, in my mind, I hear, chill out, relax, don't struggle. I don't force myself to decide. And what that means for me is I don't make too many hasty decisions anymore. I am slow to make a decision. And if I have to make an immediate choice, or I'm going to miss out on something because I didn't decide right away and I'm uncertain, then often that is the actual choice, like miss out, right? So it says, like, we're often surprised that the right answers or that occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. So as my recovery progresses, I find that my decision-making skills progress too, that I seem to just know what I should do more and more. And I have this, like, really funny little story. Like, I had this inventory where I was getting really worked up over the cleanliness or the lack thereof of my classroom. And, you know, and I was like, you know, I had, I had a lot of resentments against the people who were supposed to be doing their jobs, who weren't doing their jobs, and administration who wasn't ensuring that other people were doing their jobs. And I was really worked up over it. I prayed and meditated one morning, and like, I know this thought did not come from me. This is like, this is what God says, like in my mind, buy a Swiffer. I'm like, oh, what? You know, I really did. And like, I took God's guidance. I stopped off on the way to work. I bought like a cheap Swiffer for my classroom. And the kids almost killed themselves over getting that job of swiffing, being the ones that get to Swiffer up the classroom at the end of the day. I mean, I laugh when I think about it. It was like one of the quickest fixes. And then I was no longer like irritated with all the other people in my life. And I actually found joy in it. It was actually funny watching them learn how to swiff. So, you know, now I'm going to jump back into the AA 12 and 12. And it says, you know, page 98 asks the million-dollar question, how then shall we meditate? Like, if this is so important, how am I going to do it? And here we're told the world's libraries and places of worship are a treasure trove for all seekers. So, you know, you can go to the library. You can go to your place of worship. And then we're told, okay, or try the St. Francis prayer, for example. And I love how the AA 12 and 12 uses that as a meditative practice. So I'm gonna go through that instruction here. And, you know, it says, Lord, you know, here's the prayer. It is part of our literature. It says, Lord, make me a channel of thy peace. That where there is hatred, I may bring love. That where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness. That where there is discord, I may bring harmony. That where there is error, I may bring truth. That where there is doubt, I may bring faith. That where there is despair, I may bring hope. That where there are shadows, I may bring light. That where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds. It is by forgiving that one is forgiven. It is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. Amen. I'm just going to take a sip of my drink. Hold on. Okay. And then we're given directions for using this prayer. And it says, read it slowly and savor every word. Take in the deep meaning of each phrase and idea. Drop all resistance. For in meditation, debate has no place. So it's like they already know that we're resistant. We're rebellious. You know, to me, when I drop my resistance, that's what it means to have a true surrender. I let go of the resistance I feel. I am not too cool for this. You know, I cannot have contempt prior to investigation. You know, I relax and breathe, it says. Relax and breathe as though you're lying on the beach in the sun. Use your imagination to visualize the ocean, the horizons. I mean, I love this. It's telling me, Melissa, use your imagination. Go to happy places in your mind. You know, I use my power of visualization. I have a particular meadow. You know, I love to hike. There's some local places here. I live in a gorgeous part of New York State. The Hudson Valley is unbelievably beautiful. And I have a particular meadow near me. It's up this, like, it's in this high mountain field. And the first time I went there, I like was like, I've been here before. I just got this spiritual stirring inside me. I don't ever know that I was there, but I feel like I've been there. So when I meditate, I envision myself there because it feels godly. I feel spiritual there. I can imagine the sand under my feet when I meditate. You know, I can visualize another thing that I love. I love the water. I love the ocean. I love to swim. I visualize myself floating in the ocean on my back, you know, gently bumping through the waves. We're told, use your imagination. And we're also told what to do if you start thinking this is nonsense. Well, remember our powers of imagination and how we once used it in creating the wrong kind of realities, right? Like, I used to use my imagination for all sorts of craziness. I still can do that. You know, I can go to catastrophic thinking. Page 100 says this, perhaps our trouble was not that we used our imagination. Perhaps the real trouble was our almost total inability to point imagination towards the right objectives. So there's nothing the matter with constructive imagination. All sound achievements rest upon it. After all, no man can build a house until he first envisions a plan for it. And meditation is like that too. It helps to envision our spiritual objective before we try to move towards it. So I know I'm not building a house, but I am building my life. My meditation helps me to know God's plan for me. And then we're redirected, okay, put your mind back on that beach, or put your mind back on that mountain, or put your mind back on that high meadow, and look back at the prayer. It says, read it again and think about its essence. First of all, he wanted to become a channel. Then he asked for God's grace, for the grace to bring love, forgiveness, harmony, truth, faith, hope, light, and joy to every human being he could. So, you know, I love looking up words, and a channel has, you know, a few meanings. It's a band of frequencies, like used to tune something in, like a particular station. A channel is also a means for communication, you know, like receiving a channel, a medium of communication. You know, and a channel is like a circuit. A channel is also, you know, a waterway, a passageway. So what do I want? I want to be a passageway. I want to be a channel. I want to be a direct line for God's love to flow into the world, right? Like, That's my step direction. And a practice that I do, you know, to like receive love and give love is I envision people in my life who I want to give love to, or who I don't want to give love to, but I know I ought to want to give love to. You know, basically the troubles in my life, whether they're people or groups of people or situations, I use my power of imagination. In my mind, I sit those people in front of me, envisioning them, and I maintain eye contact with them in my mind's eye. I look at them eye to eye, and I envision sending love to them. It is difficult, by the way. This requires a lot of discipline and willpower. It is harder to resist the temptation to look away from the eyes of someone that you don't like or who's causing you trouble, you know, than it is to like refuse the food at this point. Like when I'm pissed off at someone, it requires everything within me to do this practice. And, you know, but I have to say that when I do this, you know, prayer and meditation helps me tremendously. It's helped me with difficult students. I ask God, help me find them adorable. Help me find the kid that's driving me crazy cute. And then I try to maintain eye contact in my mind with that kid, looking for their cuteness. I don't pray for more patients. You know, my sponsor told me years ago, Melissa, you keep praying for patients and God keeps giving you opportunities to practice patience. Maybe try practice, you know, praying for love. I like that. When I'm struggling with someone, I ask God, help me love them. Help me love them the way you love them. Help me love them that way. And then help me love the assignment of being their neighbor, their mother, their sister, their teacher, and their colleague. And next is, you know, we want to experience some of this for ourselves, right? The prayer reminds us that we want to experience some of this good for ourselves. We should desire forgiveness, harmony, truth, faith, hope, light, and joy. How will we experience these treasures? Well, we're told by self-forgetting, which is to comfort rather than to receive it. Better to understand than to be understood. Better to forgive than to be forgiven. So we experience all these gifts when we're more concerned with giving the things we want to the others, right? And meditation allows us to live more closely aligned with God's will for us. And we're encouraged to explore this and see it as this. And page 101 says this in the AA 12 and 12. This is so good. It says, meditation is something which can always be developed. It has no boundaries, either width or height. Aided by such instruction, an example as we can find, it is essentially an individual adventure. Okay, this is an adventure. Something with each one of us works out in his own way, but its object is always the same, to improve our conscious contact with God, with his grace, his wisdom, and love. And why do I love this? Because for me, I read this and I say, okay, I have to have really tight parameters around what I eat. That's the truth. Like, I can't walk around tasting things, sampling things. Like, I got to know what I'm going to eat, weighed and measured on my plate, but not with prayer and meditation. Here, I'm encouraged. Taste. Try out new things. I say, like, meditation and prayer is the buffet I'm invited to. I can try something, and if it doesn't move me, I don't have to do it again. I can do something else. It is my individual adventure. You know, page 102 then talks about prayer, that the third component of step 11 is prayer. And prayer is the raising of the heart and mind to God. And yes, in this sense, it includes meditation. And how do we go about it? And how does it fit in? And, you know, prayer, it says here, is commonly understood as a petition to God. Having opened our channel as best we can, we try to ask for those right things of which we and others are in the greatest need. And we think that the whole range of our needs is well defined by that part of step 11, which says knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. So I'm asking for knowledge and strength, right? So in the morning, think about the hours to come. I think about my day's work, the chances it's going to afford us to be useful and helpful. And if I have some special problem, right, I think about it. For me, I have specific workplace prayers. I pray for my administrators. I've got like a revolving door of administrators. There's always a new one. I pray for the new one that I haven't even met. She's coming soon. I pray for the one that's leaving. You know, I pray for my school board. I pray for the superintendent. I pray for my colleagues, and I always for my students. I specifically ask God, come into the classroom with me, show me what they need to learn, and help me instruct the ways he knows I'm going to be most effective. And I have to say, doing this, my instructional practice has improved like never before. Better than reading any, you know, new book on new instructional practice, God really has given me that instruction. And recently, it's interesting, you know, there's a group of people at work I'd no longer, God kind of pulled me away from them because there was too much negativity around there, and I found it difficult to remain optimistic and upbeat around them. And they didn't really seem like they were interested in what I had to say, and I kept getting tempted to gossip and speak negatively. And God's kind of done for me what I couldn't do for myself. It doesn't seem like they seek me out anymore either, right? And the beautiful thing is I don't really feel the rejection. I mean, maybe I do for a second. Here's what happened, right? Recently, I've been finding myself working more closely with the new teachers. They seem to be coming my way, and I'm offering them support and a judgment-free place to bring their questions, ideas, and concerns. Only God could take my selfish desires to, bang out my work quickly. Let me get my stuff done. Let me, get those papers corrected on my prep. Let me fly out the door as soon as the day is over. Only God can, change my direction and actually want me to stay after in order to assist someone. And that, by the way, I do it without any financial payment and no recognition, because it's not like these new teachers are going to walk around saying that they're getting help. And they, right? Nor should they. And so it's only God can do that for me, right? Page 102 says this, our immediate temptation will be to ask for specific solutions to specific problems and for the ability to help other people as we have already thought they should be helped. Basically, I have a temptation to play God and that I wind up asking God to do it my way. So even if my motives are good, I'm always reminded I am not to play God. And thinking back at my own life, I would imagine that many of my unanswered prayers were truly for the greater good, that God's plan infinitely better than anything I could have imagined. And I have to regularly check myself that I am not giving God knowledge of my plan for him and then expecting him to act like he's my agent. I have to keep reminding myself that is not what my prayer practice is, right? So, and then it's okay, as the day goes on, if something upsets me, if at these points our emotional disturbances happens to be great, we're more surely to keep our balance provided we remember and repeat to ourselves a particular prayer or phrase that has appealed to us in our readings or meditations. Just saying it over and over will often enable us to clear a channel of anger, fear, frustration, or misunderstanding and permit us to return to the surest help level, our search for God's will, not our own, in the moment of stress, in these critical moments. If we remind ourselves that it's better to comfort them than to be comforted, to understand them than to be understood, to love them than to be loved, we will be following the intent of step 11. So when I get annoyed, when I want to take charge, what comes flooding into my mind, I want to be a channel of God's love. I don't want to be a harbor for resentment. I don't want to create an environment where resentments can hang out in my harbor, And talking about this idea that we can repeat over and over, our intention, what we believe we're supposed to do, right? We say it over and over so that our channel gets clear, And so to me, that means having those affirmations, those daily mantras, those things, I can say it over and over, something that, I say is, God, I'm yours and I trust you. When I feel uncertain, when I feel upset over something, emotional pain, God, I'm yours and I trust you. And then when I'm concerned about a family member, generally it's one of my kids, they're not living the way that I've got a plan for them, and my God, they're not doing it. And God, they're yours, and I trust you. God, they're yours, and I trust you. You know, I'm reminded that the necessity for humility and to not believe that I can know God's great plan. And recently, you know, I have this family situation. It looks like my daughter and her wife are splitting up, and I am, like, heartbroken over it. And I have been tempted to pray for an outcome. I want something in particular for my daughter and her wife. And as tempting as it is, I have to admit, I don't know the whole story. I don't have God's plan down to the detail. And I have to recognize, I'm grateful for an inventory, which helped illuminate to me that there was selfishness here. One being, like, I like knowing that, you know, all the boxes are checked, and in my mind it's like, okay, you're married, you're taken care of, check, I don't have to worry about you anymore, check, you know, you're kind of like off my radar, check, you know. The other thing, like a really selfish thing is, my husband and I have become empty nesters, and frankly, we're really enjoying being just the two of us. You know, my selfishness is, I didn't really want her to move back in. Check. I mean, I don't like saying it. I didn't like seeing it on paper. You know, I had to recognize, careful with your guidance and wisdom, because you've got a motive here, you know, and I wouldn't see it unless I put it down on paper and shared it with another person and asked God, help me. You know, and here's the great thing. I don't know God's plan. The girls decided that they want to be like close friends, and my daughter's moving into the other bedroom. Like, what do I know? You know, it might, maybe she'll show up at my door tomorrow. I don't know. I don't have God's plan down to the last detail. God, they're yours, and I trust you. Page 104 says that we discover that we do receive guidance for our lives to just about the extent that we stop making demands upon God to give it to us on order and on our terms. You know, it's like, I think about like ordering it like Burger King years ago. I'm going to have it my way, you know, like I'm going to tell God, you know, hold the pickle, hold the lettuce, right? Almost any experienced AA will tell how his affairs have taken remarkable and unexpected turns for the better as he tried to improve his conscious contact with God. So if I focus on relying on God during my hardships and I look to strengthen my relationship with God, I don't have to exert so much energy coming up with a solution. Like, I didn't have to work out my daughter's living arrangements, her marriage, or, you know, any of that. I didn't have to come up with a solution if I exert my energy into my relationship with God. Because here's what generally happens for me. Either the great obstacle isn't as big as I thought, the mountain actually was a molehill sometimes, or that great obstacle turns into a gift, or God gives me a fellow, a sister, or who's experienced in this particular obstacle, this difficulty, who can offer me guidance, or someone who's actually experiencing it with me real time, and somehow my burden gets lifted. I mean, I have to tell you, the crazy thing is, the day that my daughter shared what was going on in her marriage, maybe 20 minutes before, a sponsee and close fellow called me with the exact same struggle in her child's marriage. And we were able, you know, we talked about it, walked through it. None of us are giving each other advice or guidance, but we're allowing one another to see the power of God. And what I'm reminded to is I am never alone. God never leaves me alone. You know, for those people in program who think that fellowship is just, you know, a cute kind of fluffy thing on the side, that it's kind of the icing on the cake, I want to say it is not. Like, my experience is, it is how I experience God. God gave me fellows. He made me a human being. I am not supposed to practice, I don't believe, this program in isolation. Rather, I'm supposed to practice it in community, and it is something that I would not miss for $1 million. I actually experience strength of God through my fellows. I'm grateful that I have a fellowship that supports me and sustains me. And so we're reminded how to go through life's certain difficulties. Page 105. It says, out of every season of grief or suffering, when the hand of God seemed heavy or unjust, new lessons for living were learned, new resources of courage were uncovered, and that finally, inescapably, the conviction that God does move in mysterious ways his wonders to perform. And I don't know why, but I never seem to learn my spiritual lessons on vacation. Like, well, maybe once I did when we had a flood in our vacation condo, but I didn't experience it on the beautiful sunny day at the beach. I don't grow courageous when I've got nothing to be afraid of. I get conviction of God's presence when I am hurting and in need, and he pulls me out and he pulls me through. That's how I get convicted. So what do we get from meditation and prayer? Well, perhaps one of the greatest rewards of meditation and prayer is the sense of belonging that comes to us. We no longer live in a completely hostile world. Oh my gosh, I read that and it's like I could cry. I don't live in a hostile world, regardless of what the news might be telling me. You know, I can change a channel. I don't live in a hostile world. We are no longer lost and frightened and purposeless. The moment we catch even a glimpse of God's will, the moment we begin to see truth, justice, and love as the real and eternal things in life, we are no longer deeply disturbed by all the seeming evidence to the contrary that surrounds us in purely human affairs. We know that God lovingly watches over us. We know that when we turn to him, all will be well with us here and hereafter. And I love this. I feel like, what do I get? I belong. I feel like the world is not so scary. The world is not out to hurt me. I feel like I'm exactly where I'm meant to be, doing what I'm supposed to do, saying what in this moment what I think I'm supposed to say, and I'm not afraid. You know, I have purpose, I have direction, and I have an important job to do. You know, before I speak anytime, you know, I always ask God, like, put in my mind and in my heart the words that you want me to say. Like, make your thoughts my thoughts. Make your words my words. Get me out of the way. And when I do that, I feel like I've got an important job to do. You know, I feel God with me, and I feel safe, and I feel protected. And thanks. With that, I'll pass.
Oh, thank you, Melissa, for such a beautiful, instructive, rich, and profound presentation this morning. Thank you for your time and all your effort. Share ID for today, 23,196. That's 23196 for Melissa's presentation. Her contact information will be given at the conclusion of the recording, so do stay tuned for that. Now we will transition to a question and answer segment. You can pose a question to Melissa by pressing star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name. Questions only. Thank you.
Ginger C.
B.
Henrietta
T.
Jennifer C.
Christina L.
Anayeta.
Canayeta. Okay. I have Ginger.
Aspen, New Jersey.
Pete. Ted. Okay. Ginger C. Pete. Canayeta. Ted. Who did I miss?
Christina.
Danny P. I remember hearing Jennifer C. in there.
Jennifer C.
Yes, Jennifer, gotcha. Thank you, Danny P. And there is another person I'm missing here.
Did you get Christina L?
Thank you, Christina. Okay. This is my list. Ginger C, Pete B, Hanayeta, Ted, Jennifer C, Danny P, Christina L. Is there anyone else that I missed that said their name?
Vanessa G.
Whose last initial is G? Or
Vanessa?
Vanessa, I'm so sorry. Thank you. Okay, this is our list. Let's get started. Ginger C, you're up.
Good morning, Leah. Thank you for your service. Ginger C, real compulsive overeater in Colorado. Melissa, that was just beautiful. What a wonderful way to start this Sunday. So thank you for your service. The great reality is down deep within. And I love how you mentioned we can watch hours of television, but like how much time are you spending with the source that's going to keep you out of the food? So so grateful too that you mentioned, you know, you can start this even at step zero, this prayer and this meditation practice. I think that was huge to hear. But I would just love to hear, like, what does your practice look like? Do you begin in the morning on the pages and then in a quiet sit? Just curious how you're connecting in and throughout that day. So thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Ginger. Glad to hear you. Yeah, so my particular practice is, I start my inventory before I go to bed, and the first thing I do in the morning is I reread my inventory. I personally add my gratitude to it because I need an attitude adjustment. I need to see the good in my life, and I'm very specific about my gratitude. I don't just, it's not just I'm grateful for my husband, I'm grateful for my home. I get real specific. I need to shine a light on the good so I can change my attitude. And then I really go through all the steps, and there are prayers for each step, which, you know, is available in another, you know, it's another format. So I'm not going to share it, but I say all the steps in a prayer. There's a prayer for it. And I specifically focus, I have some meditative practices I do around step three, because I am always wanting to be the agent, you know, I always want to be, you know, the principal, and I often need help being the agent, knowing how to rightly relate myself. I focus on step three. I have a whole battery of prayers for situations that are going on in my life, real time. I am a writer of prayers. I write them. I read them. I write them. I say them. I go into meditation. I have a space that I like to meditate in my house. I do all different forms of meditation. I put pen to paper. It is so crucially important for me. That really is my practice. I actually do what the book says to do. In my opinion, I actually do it. I also want to say that I have a timer, which I learned from a fellow here on the lines. I have a timer on my phone. It goes off every hour. It is my, and it says prayer. And it goes off. I stop. I breathe in. I unclench my fists, because usually my fists are clenched, and I invite God in. I say something I'm grateful for in the moment, and then I proceed. I hope that helps. Thanks.
Thank you, Ginger. Pete B., your turn.
Thank you, Leah, for your service, and thank you, Melissa, for that presentation. It was really good, and I really appreciate it. And I just had a question. So it says in step 11, it says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought of action. Could you talk about the differences between that and what we do in taking personal inventory in step 10?
I don't know. I mean, I have to think about that. I don't know. I mean, I could tell you, I don't know the difference, but I can tell you what I do, right? I do what it says. Like, when I'm going, like, read that part again that you just said in step 11, if you could, and I'll just kind of, because I lost exactly what you said. I would just kind of zone in. I don't know if you're unmuted. But.
I got muted again. Sorry. Okay. It says, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and
yep.
ask for the right thought or action.
Okay, so I'm going to jump in right there. So as I go through the day, if I'm getting like all wonky and agitated and doubtful, I invite God in. Like that's where my timer is really helpful. Oh, God, please change. It's usually I like there's a kid who's driving me crazy. He like won't sit down and do what he's asked to do. I have 15 boys in my classroom right now. They are crazy. I'm like, God, help me. Now, what is the difference for me? If I can't find my way back into like spiritual alignment, if I can't get out of my head what they're doing and what I ought to be doing differently, I might need to do a little bit more of an inventory. I might need to shine a light a little brighter. I don't know if that's the right answer, but that seems to be the practice that works for me. I hope that's helpful.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pete. Conietta, your turn.
Excuse me. Thank you. Thank you, Melissa. I always love listening to you, and thank you so much. You were talking about how sometimes God doesn't answer your prayers, and that it's really good that he probably doesn't, because the outcome's usually okay. You know, I don't remember exactly the words you said, but the outcome was okay. Have you ever thought that when you think he's not answering your prayers, that he's actually saying no, or not now, or, you know, maybe later, you know, it's not good for you, you know, could there be another reason why he's not answering what you think he's not answering?
So I want to say, in real time, do I think that? Gosh, I wish I did. Probably I don't. For me, it's always like retrospect. Oh, yeah, that turned out good. But I do comfort myself saying, Melissa, you don't have the answer. Like, trust God. God, I'm yours, I trust you. God, I'm yours, I trust you. And I have a friend who shared with me once, when she asks God for something and the prayers seem unanswered, her interpretation is, God says no, or not now, or I got something better in mind. And for me, I just have to keep going to, God, I'm yours and I trust you. God, I'm yours, I trust you. You know, and the other thing I would say is I reflect back on this recovery in a million years. I never dreamed. My plan was, God, just please don't make me fat. I can't stand it. And now it's like, I'm so grateful that it got as bad as it got. Like, that was a gift. Thanks. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Hanietta. Ted from New Jersey, your turn. Ted, star one to unmute. Perhaps there was no Ted. All right. Jennifer C., your turn to ask the question.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Leah. Thank you, Melissa. I love you, and you walk the walk. Thank you for being an example for all of us. So, question on behalf of the person who is still in the food, struggling to get out, stringing some days together, going back in. And an earlier question alluded to this, but how do you, guide that person who is still struggling to get abstinent as it pertains to step 11? What role does step 11 play? I know that they're clearly not on step 11, but how do you walk that person through their journey at this point if the food is still an issue?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. So actually, I'd say that is where prayer becomes the most important thing. I reflect back on my own, you know, powerlessness and unmanageability, which is what step one is. You know, and when I'm out there experimenting with the food, I sometimes still thought I had the power. Like, I'm making the decision. I'm, you know, I want this. I don't care. I thought I was wielding my power, and then struggling with the food, I was coming face to face was, holy crap, I can want this with all my might, and I can't do squat about it. That is really like, whoa, that's like, and where do I need God more in my life? Right then and there in the beginning. So I would guide somebody like, yeah, let's start with prayer and basically ask God to come in and intervene on your behalf. Like, it could start with that kind of prayer. I generally tell people, let's look at step one. Step one says only an act of providence will remove the merciless obsession, and an act of providence is an intervention on, you know, from God, right? It's a miracle. So I start people off, start praying, ask God for a miracle of healing, and then do everything within your human power to, like, live in agreement with that miracle. Meaning, you know, people who are praying for, a miracle of healing, they make time to receive the miracle, right? If I was suffering with cancer, I would not put off my my treatment, you know, my chemotherapy treatment, because I'd really rather go exercise. You know, I would say, like, okay, I would remind the person, what's your chemo here? What is the thing that's going to get you relieved? And I say, as a sponsor, this is such difficult work. I'd say, you know, because we cannot keep a person abstinent, but we can certainly make them feel warm, welcome, safe, supportive, you know, and we can pray for them. I hope that helps, Jennifer.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jennifer. Danny P.
Ted from New Jersey. Can I jump in? I got my phone complicated.
Sure. Sure,
thank
Ted.
You so much. I really appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks. My question, first of all, you did a great job. My question is about visualization. Like, when you visualize, do you visualize what you want in life, or do you visualize what God wants? Like, I guess I struggle with visualization. You know, do I visualize what I want, or how do you visualize what God wants? Like,
there's two. Thanks, Ted. So I think that's really where, like, take out that St. Francis prayer, because it's like, what do I want? I want what God wants. How's that? So I try to visualize, like, what would it look like if God showed up and everything was taken care of today? Like, how would that be if God just... And so then basically I'm asking to visualize, God, what do you want me to do? Like, how would you like me to be? You know, and so, like, you know, like a concrete thing, right? I could say, I want, you know, like, I could pray that all my kids, all my students do their homework. Yeah, okay, very nice. That sounds great. Or all the kids are focused during reading instruction. Very nice. That, I'm not going to get that. Right. What would I visualize? How am I going to be towards my students today? How can I be loving? You know, how can I be supportive? What will it look like? You know, so I try not to visualize the results, right? but actually visualize what my marching orders are. What's my instruction? God, give me my instruction. Tell me what to do. You know, and then if I'm not sure what to do, I can err on the thing that I think is the most loving, is the thing that is the most kind. And know if I make a mistake, you know, God will redirect me again. I hope that's helpful, Ted.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Ted. Danny P.
Hi, Laura. Can I be heard?
Yes.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service and for your patience. Wow, Melissa, thank you so much for this wonderful, beautiful presentation on the best step ever. Thank you so much. You're very helpful to me. I was wondering, my question is, one of the instructions is we ask others to join us in prayer and meditation. And in Vision for You in Brazil, we have been doing that. We are encouraging sponsors and sponsors to pray and meditate together. And this has been extremely helpful, especially for the newcomer, who's very angry, very resentful, doesn't want to spend any time with God. But do you have any experience in praying with others?
Yes. Oh, my God. I'm like smiling inside. It's the best thing. Yes. In fact, one of the greatest parts is that when we've gotten, especially in person, when we've had chances to come together, whether it's been at the OA birthday party or at the Vision for You convention or any of those in-person things, one of the best, you know, experiences been is like getting together with fellows and like sponsees, and we come together and we've prayed in the morning and done meditation together, and it is just, I mean, it tastes better than anything I've ever eaten. It is just incredible, and that is a practice that I do. Many of the people that are in my recovery circle, we do pray together. We send each other prayers. We send each other meditations. We send each other spiritual nuggets and tidbits. I have sponsees that, like, we will pray together, you know. I think it is, yes, it is incredibly powerful. And I think someone new and struggling, if a sponsor or sponsee or a co-fellow can pray with them and for them, the benefits are incredible. Thanks for bringing that, you know, up. I would hate to neglect discussing that because it really is. Oh my gosh, it's such an incredible gift of this program to get that, to feel God, you know, in community with others. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Danny P. Christina L. Your question, please.
Good morning. Thanks so much for your service, Leia and Melissa. Oh, my gosh, that was so powerful and rich. My question, I hope I'm not repeating a question because I got distracted during Ted's question, and something you shared kind of sounded almost like what I might be asking. But where you were talking about during your presentation, you know, praying for others and what you're praying for. This is actually something I've done, but I struggle with it because sometimes I feel like I'm playing God and telling God, you know, what the outcome should be, even though I'm, you know, saying your will be done, not mine. But I just wanted to see if you could speak a little bit about that. Because, like, you know, my faith tells me ask for whatever it is you want and it will be given. But then, you know, the 12 steps tells me, you know, never to pray for my own selfish ends. So
unless others will benefit, right? It says unless there's a benefit for others. So, you know, so like I'll sort of like give an example, right? So like I'm not praying, even though I want to, for a certain outcome, let's say where my kids are concerned. What I pray is I ask God to hold my child gently through this particular season of loss and change, that where my child is feeling confused, where I'm feeling confused, bring us clarity. Where they're hurt, I ask God to bring healing. And where there's fear, bring steady courage. I ask God, I mean, this is the prayer I have written down. I ask God, bring them peace. Bring them and me the peace, the kind of peace that does not depend on circumstances. Like, I ask God to guide our steps so our choices are rooted in wisdom, in God's wisdom, and not in human worry. And I ask God, if you could please surround us with people who are truthful and kind and offer us support without judgment. I ask God, strengthen our spirits as we might be grieving and to help us face what comes next. I ask God to help us all remember our worth, our resilience and love that still surrounds us. And I ask God, please, through all of this, please, God, help me so that no matter what, I can be a steady presence, that I can be patient, that I can be compassionate, and that I can be grounded, you know, so that those people, my children, don't feel alone. Rather than telling God exactly what I want, I'm asking God to strengthen me, change me, not my circumstances, right? I hope that's helpful, Christina.
Thank you, Christina. Our last question for today comes from Vanessa G.
Hi, everybody that's on the line, and thank you, Melissa. Oh, my gosh, such food. The right type. Anyway, I actually do have an issue that I'd like to know if you could help me with. This is Vanessa G., by the way. I'm recovered in New Mexico. I do everything, I think, that you've talked about this morning. But lately, I have had an unquiet mind. I keep getting distracted. I even get distracted, you know, during meetings. And my mind is just jumpy lately. Do you have any clues whether to keep doing what I'm doing or maybe there's something different that I should be doing?
Yeah, I mean, I would say, thanks, Vanessa. I would say sometimes it's like, okay, what, you know, like, and probably offline, right? We could talk like, what is your mind jumping to? You know, because like I've heard someone share here, if I tell myself to stop thinking about something in particular, I can't help but to think about it. So like generally when I start off meditating, I it's almost a shopping list pops up in my mind. It's like, oh my gosh, I forgot to do this and I've got to do this and did I move the towels in the dryer and blah, 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 blah. I kind of let it all, you know, and maybe what you really need is to like give your mind some time to go where your mind is going. Maybe the stop, is there something you're avoiding? Let it go all over the place. You know, I'm not sure if that, you know, if that's really an answer to it or if you're just having this kind of, you know, I can get that same kind of thing, that sort of ping, ping, ping kind of mind. And I think some of it is the nature of the world that we live in with like constant communication, constant information, constant bombardment. You know, I got to put my phone away so it's not beeping and binging at me all the time, distracting me. You know, but I would say it might be worth looking at what it is, what are the things that keep popping up that are pulling your attention. You know, make a list of them and maybe kind of look at them, examine them closely. Is there something that you're supposed to be addressing that you're in fact not, rather than just, you know, trying to say, mind be still, stop it. Like maybe you actually have to spend some time actually letting it go where it's going. Yeah, I hope that's helpful. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vanessa G., for your question. Thanks to all who posed questions this morning. Thank you so much, Melissa C., for this rich and powerful presentation this morning on Step 11. Truly a gem for the archives. Thank you for all that you offered to all of us. The share ID for today, 23,196. That's 23196 for this morning's presentation. We're going to close now from page 164. It's from a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.